Bearing witness is to carry the memory of suffering and to attest to the possibility of transformation into new life. The people whose vocation is to commemorate mass trauma serve as a parable for the common experience of humanity, undertaking the psychosocial and spiritual task of rebuilding after trauma. Remembering what was opens to what can be. I'm Dr. Stephanie Arell.
And I'm Jessica Daugherty, and this is Bearing Witness, The Impact of Memorialization, a companion podcast for Dr. Arell's forthcoming book, which focuses on the cost of bearing witness and posits that museum and memorial workers hold a place of high honor in the socio-spiritual lexicon. As a doctor of theology and a documentary filmmaker, we are a team investigating the human experience of trauma and its impact on those who care for, commemorate, and remember our past for the benefit of our collective future.
I worked for 2 years at the 9/11 Memorial Museum as an Andrew W. Mellon Fellow. Their foundation generously supported my research, including 80 interviews that took place at sites that commemorate mass trauma worldwide. In this series, we will speak with museum and memorial workers, including curators, collectors, writers, and directors, about the impact their work has on communities and themselves to investigate the importance of the roles they play in society.
In this episode, we're speaking with Lisa Conti, head conservator at the National September 11th Memorial and Museum, and Alexandra Drakakis, a former curator who worked there for 13 years, to discuss the evolution of the museum and its impact on their own lives and careers. Welcome, Lisa, and welcome, Alex.
Yes, welcome, Lisa and Alex. Can you start by telling us just a little bit about your role at the 9/11 Memorial and Museum?
My name is Lisa Conti. I'm the head conservator at the National September 11th Memorial Museum. And my role at the museum is to be the caretaker of the collection, which includes recovered artifacts, memorial and tribute items, evidence of the terrorist event itself, as well as historical records, both in physical and digital form.
My name is Alexandra Drakakis, and I was a curator at the National September 11th Memorial Museum from 2007 to 2020. And during my time at the memorial, a large part of my responsibilities revolved around working directly with members of the 9/11 community to bring artifacts and stories into the collection.
So as I've been thinking about it more, is that there are rhetorical, value-driven statements made about the spaces in which, Alex, you worked, and Lisa, you were working, about the space being sacred. And there seems to me no real translation of what that means or the burden that puts on the person working there. So not only in my mind do people working in these spaces function as psychologists who don't have training, but they also function as mediating experiences for people that would have at some point of the past be mediated by religious institutions. That's thinking about community healing. That's thinking about anniversaries, which are essentially funerals, which really do function like religious rituals. That's thinking about being support networks for individuals that come. That has to do with taking relics and artifacts, preserving them. All of these things happen within religious institutions. Now, I'm not claiming this is a religious institution, but what I'm saying are the people that work there are asked to connect communities to meaning and purpose, to conduct some level of healing, to mediate memory, to help people process suffering. And that has a psychological aspect, but that has another kind of spiritual aspect, if you will, that's about the whole person. The memorial museum worker models for theologians what it means to heal communities. So it doesn't have to be a framework that's projected. It can also be a framework that's a model for what it means to heal community, mediate memory, create rituals, and make meaning of suffering.
Incredible work that you both do to gather and record, but also to take on everyone's personal story and personal experience. That's a lot to shoulder. Do you feel that? Do you feel like it's a heavy, is it a burden to carry in any way?
I don't know if I would ever have used the word burden. I found that I gained a lot of times a lot of energy from the work that I did at the memorial. I think, of course, it's difficult to listen to traumatic experiences day in and day out. And I don't mean to undermine the difficulty in doing that kind of work by any means, but there's something also very inspirational about seeing so many versions and so many ways in which people move through their grief. And I think that for me, I found a touchstone in that. And I also feel like my experiences at the memorial in many ways helped inform my own personal relationship to grief that I've experienced throughout my life as well.
For myself, working at the museum is a powerful experience. And in some days, that's about thinking, how do our spirits triumph in moments of great tragedy? But other times, it's hard not to be consumed by other people's grief. You know, either by reading about it or by the way in which objects can convey the stories of people's lives. And so our responsibility is in preserving not just the artifact, but these stories that also can resonate differently to different people. So in a sense, rather, maybe it's a word of responsibility that we have to history, as well as the way in which these stories, you know, will live on in time.
Can we talk a little bit about healing? And I use the word healing, and I'm not even really sure that's the right word. What does it mean to say healing? And what is the effect of engaging in that for you?
I think it's a great question. During my time at the memorial and even beyond it, quite honestly, I've reevaluated my word choices time and time again. And healing is one of those words that I constantly come back to and have to ask myself, why am I uncomfortable working that word into my vocabulary? And I don't know, there's just something about the word healing that maybe feels a little bit presumptuous to me. And I don't know, again, kind of relating my experience at the 9/11 museum to my own grief journey, the way that I see it is not that you heal from these traumatic experiences so much as you just kind of learn how to live with them. And it's almost like learning how to walk with a limp after suffering an injury or something along those lines. I don't think that you ever fully recover. I think that you just kind of adapt and it becomes part of you, and you learn how to move forward with it.
Yeah, and for everybody, grief is going to mean and manifest differently. And so I think the museum plays a different role for different people in that grief journey, where, for example, some people wanted to come and be on the site right away because they viewed it, in their words, as sacred ground. They wanted to preserve elements of the original World Trade Center site because it is where their loved ones lived and died. while others are still not even 20 years ready to visit the site or the museum in that kind of way, because for them, it makes them kind of confront that traumatic experience or whatever it might mean, but it's a highly individualized journey and that we can't expect for there ever to be a one-size-fits-all approach in those experiences.
How does the grief manifest as you see it?
I mean, I think there's a lot of power in objects. In the way that at the museum, we are relying on objects to tell the stories of people's life and the event and the experiences that came after it, the interactions that people have with objects can be very deeply personal. The way in which we even navigate the museum can be an experience in of itself. And the things that you stop to pay reverence to, or the things that you walk past, you're coming to the museum to learn, but at the same time, you're coming to, in some ways, experience the lives of others and the trauma that affected others much more than some.
Yeah, and I'd add to that too, that you're experiencing all of this at the actual site where the atrocity occurred. And there are constant reminders of that as you make your way through the museum. And those reminders come in the form of the archaeological remnants of the original Twin Towers, whether those are the box column remnants or the slurry wall. You're constantly confronted with those as you move through the space, and you're very, I think, conscious of where you're experiencing all these emotions and all of these stories.
So when you say you, do you mean the visitor?
Absolutely, yes.
And so what's the role and what is the effect on all of this on the person who works there?
It depends on the day. Sometimes you need to have more emotional or psychological distance than others. As much as it's a great reward to kind of contribute to the caretaking of this material and help with preservation of people's stories and their lives, you're also confronting really traumatic imagery, traumatic stories. For me, at least, sometimes I have to create some psychological distance from it in order to survive it.
I agree with that sentiment completely. And I would even say, too, that I felt, first of all, that I had a lot of support around me throughout my tenure at the Memorial Museum. And I leaned on my friends and family and colleagues throughout that experience, and they definitely lifted me up and helped me through. I found that sometimes I just needed to talk about what I experienced on a given day, a story that I was told, or an artifact that I accepted and brought into the collection. And then other days, I didn't want to talk at all. I just wanted to go home. I just wanted to watch TV and go to bed. So it truly fluctuated from one extreme to the other.
All of us work together at the National September 11th Memorial Museum. And I keep saying that just to distinguish that particular museum from the other museums that have recognized 9/11 as a day of remembrance. All of us worked together there, and so all of us participated in the anniversary celebration, and both of you many more times than I did. And yet, I'm still acutely aware that we're approaching September 11th, and it's in my consciousness, and I'm thinking about the people I know that are affected by it. I'm thinking about the people I know who are getting asked to do interviews because it's the 20th anniversary. I'm thinking about the people who want to go there but don't, who were employees, who have family members, or who have family members who weren't employees, and still navigating, like, what's the right choice? Do I go? Do I not go? How does it feel? And I'm just wondering, as a worker or an employer, a past employee, Alex, you might even have some of this discourse going on in your head. I mean, someone asked me to volunteer. where do we fall? How do we engage? What are the parameters? How does it even feel to be thinking about this? And Lisa, you're still in the trenches, sort of preparing for it and navigating the level of political discourse that comes up around who and when and what and why and how and et cetera. So can we talk about that a little bit?
You know, for me, participating in the anniversary ceremonies, I feel it honors a commitment that I have to service. So a service to my community, a service to preserving history, a service to contributing to the role of the museum and making connections. So I also look at anniversaries as something that are very important to different cultures, and they're going to, again, mean different things to different people and be celebrated differently. Where some people are manifesting grief through pain and suffering, while others use anniversaries as an opportunity for celebrating particular lives. For me, I'm not a family member. I have personal connections, as we all do. I try to look at the event itself as something that we preserve through history so that we can do better than what happened that day and learn from it. But I also think of anniversaries as a way to celebrate lives. And I try to keep my focus there as best as possible, because for me, that's the way I navigate it. But that doesn't mean that that's right for somebody else.
My relationship to the anniversaries is definitely still evolving. Last year was the first time in almost 13 years, I think, that I wasn't working down at Ground Zero on 9/11. And the lead up to that was really anxiety inducing to me in many ways. But I had to kind of pause and realize that it was also an opportunity for me to shape a new kind of relationship to the 9/11 anniversary as this, you know, kind of outsider now that I'm not in it anymore. I could still be a part of it, and I can dictate the terms in which I want to do that. And so what I did last year was felt really great, actually. It felt really meaningful. I wanted to see the tribute in light, and Justin, my partner, and I drove out to Rockaway Beach, and we looked at the lights from the peninsula, and it was just really meaningful. And I have to say that it's amazing to be on this call with Lisa right now, because Lisa and I have a plan to go and see William Baczynski perform Disintegration Loops on the evening of September 11th. So I'm really looking forward to marking the anniversary in that way. And when I was an employee at the museum, I felt like I had to develop this relationship to the anniversaries, that I was there to serve. I was there to do whatever needed to be done to make a family member, a recovery worker, survivor, whoever it was, make them feel like they could navigate the site, make them feel comfortable. If they needed, you know, anything at all, I was there to be able to run and get it for them. So I looked at my role as extremely service driven during the anniversaries. And I don't know, I was kind of thinking about that relationship in the lead up to this conversation and wondering if it was in a way kind of like a defense mechanism to put up, you know, a wall between, an emotional wall between myself and the anniversary. Because I never actually, in all those years, really had a chance to experience the anniversary as a spectator or as a visitor to the site. I always wanted to be busy. I always wanted to be running around and preoccupied with, you know, doing whatever I had to do to make somebody else's experience as comfortable as possible. And that was really what drove me through those anniversaries all those years. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You were one of the holders of the ritual, and that was very important to you. Do you feel similarly, Lisa? What's your experience of past anniversary celebrations?
Alex has used the word devolving. I would say mine is evolving in that each year I've been situated somewhere different. And so that literal geographic placement in the landscape on the day of sort of determines who you might be in contact with on any different anniversary. So for example, you may be stationed in the museum and be a point of contact for family members that are visiting the site, or you may be stationed on the perimeter itself, in which case you're fielding questions from the public that might be asking what is going on. So you are more of an interpreter of the event itself to people who may have very little connection, if any at all, to the anniversary itself. It's not static in that way. So very much the experience you have is mediated through your placement on the site. I myself have been on, I would say, more of the periphery of the site rather than embedded at the very center of where the readings are happening, the reading of the names, as well as where the family members and others within the community convene. So in a sense, I haven't had that closeness on the anniversary itself. I've only heard things projected through speakers. I haven't heard voices in a more intimate way. And also having some distance from it, for me, is why I think I can have, you know, in this conversation, kind of a bit of a separation from it.
The grief is what people see when they turn on the TV on September 11th and they hear the names being read. But for us down at the site, in addition to confronting that, there was also, especially in the earlier years, everything that was going on outside of the site as well. There were people protesting certain decisions that the museum was making during its development. There were truthers out, you know, near Ground Zero. At one point, I don't remember exactly what year, there were protests revolving around the Islamic Center that was going to be constructed a little bit north of Ground Zero. And I have these distinct memories of kind of emerging from the site after the anniversaries and then being confronted with these mobs of angry people protesting, you know, across the board. Or It was very difficult for me one year to even get onto the subway because there were so many police barricades, you know, holding protesters back. And this was in 2009, I think, or somewhere around that time. So there are also these feelings of anger and frustration that you have to kind of confront as well that day. I mean, and I can't imagine what that must be like to experience if you're a 9/11 family member or have that level of additional closeness to that day or its ongoing aftermath. It's like, not only, you know, is it a day where you're remembering a loved one or reliving a very, very deeply personal traumatic experience, but it's also a day that you're reminded of all this, you know, all this chaos, all of this mixed emotion. And that's very, very present at the site too. I mean, maybe it's starting to lessen a little bit, but in those earlier years, it was very prominent and it always felt shocking to me to come out of the site, to start walking up north and then all of a sudden to be confronted with that, or even before the site was open to the public, when we had the preview site, the 9/11 Memorial preview site over on Vesey Street, even outside on Vesey Street in front of Trinity Church and St. Paul's Chapel, there were a lot of demonstrations happening right there, right across the street from where we were inviting family members into a space that we were trying to make safe for them and we were trying to make comfortable as possible. And right across the street, there were people questioning the very need for a 9/11 memorial to exist in certain instances, questioning the very basis of what happened on 9/11. And I always wonder about, because I know that it's not new that they're conspiracy theorists or, you know, and I'm not saying that it's wrong for people to have alternative opinions. It's just that when confronted with that on top of the grief, it's just unusual. It's just an unusual experience for the worker. And it's difficult to think about what that must be like for somebody with an added level of closeness to that day and that experience.
I'm thinking about how you are all articulating different aspects of what Judith Herman, who's a trauma theorist, talks about as the process of recovery from traumatic circumstances. And the trajectory of that is to A, create some kind of safety, both internally for the person experiencing the trauma in terms of regulating their body, and externally in terms of thinking about how the external environment can be safe. And I've heard you both articulate different ways where you mediate part of that for others and yourself. The second aspect is this concept of memory and mourning. We've talked about remembering and we've talked about grieving, also part of that trajectory. The third part is taking the trauma story. And this kind of alludes to what you mentioned at the beginning, Alex, which in relationship to healing, which is having the story be somehow integrated into life, but it never leaves. It's not as if there's an erasure. For instance, an identification of someone's life more integrated into someone's life. There are many ways to articulate that. But so I'm thinking from a psychological perspective, what you all do for helping create meaning. And Lisa, certainly artifacts are part of that. And also thinking about how you stay attached to meaning. Because in either case, for the person experiencing the trauma, or I think, maybe you can correct me, but I think in either case, whether it's the person experiencing the trauma as an external observer, as a survivor, as a family member, whoever, or the worker, who in many cases is one of those two or three things, by the way, right? There is a negotiation with how to integrate the story into present life, which to me relates to creating meaning.
Stephanie, do you suggest that in order for the meaning of this, the memorial and museum, to have efficacy into the future, the people who facilitate it have to have meaning for themselves and as individuals in order to be successful in maintaining that that memory and that commemoration?
I wouldn't go so far as the statement efficacy into the future. I mean, that's another part of the question is efficacy, but I'm more concerned about people's emotional, psychological, physical, and ethical processes around commemorating mass trauma. And so when I say meaning, I mean larger purpose. I mean thinking about working on a site if you've lost a family member or you were there during the recovery and believing that what you're doing has some deeper meaning than going to work and, for instance, doing the accounting. That there's some larger purpose to this role. And I don't mean to discount doing accounting. I'm just saying it's going to be a different job at Disney World than it's going to be at the September 11th Museum. I think, I mean, we can debate all of those things.
What I've been thinking a lot about lately is the fact that, you know, people find meaning in different things. I find meaning in working at the September 11th Memorial Museum. And for me, I feel like it's a socially engaged role where I'm contributing to the preservation of stories and ideas for the benefit of something bigger than myself. working within a museum and specifically working to kind of preserve artifacts, you know, you are directly kind of connected to the way that we as a society may evolve, because we learn from history. You know, our present is influenced by the past. And I think that we make connections to grow. We make connections to grow from them. And so for me, I'm just playing a role where, as a facilitator, to making sure that certain aspects of history are remembered and hopefully with some truth, because that's an important part of what we do as well, is understanding and appreciating that stories can be told different ways, especially about September 11th. It's very important that we're representing that history as fully as possible.
Yeah, it brings up the thought and question about the purpose of the commemoration of trauma. You heard the phrase often right after 9/11, 2001, never forget. And to me, that meant never forget the people we lost, honor their memory. But I think it may have meant other things for others in that fresh moment that it was. And now, 20 years later, we're still commemorating this trauma, but has the purpose and function of that commemoration changed for you two personally, or at the institution as a whole? Has its ethos shifted toward marking memory in any other way besides commemorating the lives lost?
That's a really hard question.
Yeah.
I just want to say for myself, in particular, I want to make clear that I'm a paper conservator who's studied history, who's studied art history, who's studied the history now of 9/11 and all of the people that it's affected. But I'm not a trauma expert, and my expertise is not in the history of commemoration. It's something that I actively seek to learn about, to appreciate what commemoration can mean. And I appreciate, obviously, the mission of the museum and why the museum is there. But in terms of the interpretation of commemoration on a broader scale, that's not something that is a theme that I've studied. And I would even say there that my knowledge is only beginning to evolve. It's a very complex question, especially in the context of this museum, whose history is still evolving as well, and the impact that it's had on the world as we know it. People would not debate it so much if it didn't have so much resonance into the way that we still live our lives. The pain and suffering that people are still enduring as a result of that one day.
And I'll add to that, that to me, 20 years isn't really that long. And when we think back to developing the 9/11 memorial and museum, I think that, you know, it happened pretty quickly in all fairness. And I always loved how my former boss, Dr. Jan Ramirez, would characterize the museum as a first draft, that it was bound to change and it was bound to evolve. And that's how our relationship to grief kind of is, when it takes a natural course, in my opinion. And I think that as a society, sometimes I get so frustrated because I feel like we've got the idea of commemoration all wrong. We think that somehow these milestone anniversaries are going to come around and that everything is going to be okay. The pain is somehow going to be lifted. And I think that this is part of the reason why I was so frustrated with what's going on in current events now. When it was announced that the American troops were going to be pulled out of Afghanistan by the 9/11 20th anniversary or prior to it, I felt so frustrated that date was once again being politicized and used and utilized in that fashion. Like somehow it was implying that if American troops were to vacate Afghanistan by this date, that somehow all pain would be alleviated, or not all pain would be alleviated, but I think you know what I mean, that somehow it was going to peel back a layer and make things a little bit less painful than they truly are. I do think that we look at things societally a little bit too simplistically when it comes to commemoration. And like Lisa was saying earlier, it really all boils down to the individual to think about what their relationship is to 9/11 at that moment in time. And it's not going to be linear, and it's not going to be clean cut. And one year it might feel liberating, and then the following year it might feel like a huge regression. But I think that somehow, this is just my opinion, that we think that maybe in Western philosophy, perhaps, that by a certain year, by a certain marker, we should or could be in a different place as a society in our relationship to an event. But it just doesn't work that way. It's just not that clear cut.
Especially with your definition and the way you view grief as something that we process, but it stays with us. It never quite really goes away, and it can change from time to time. It sounds like your accepting of that is part of your ability to do the service, as you called it, because the work of holding this is a very big service for people who need processing.
Sure. And my experience at the 9/11 Museum, it very much felt like a calling. I felt like that was where I was supposed to be. And I still feel that way in many regards.
I've been thinking a lot lately about the relationship that we have with the objects and how that helps us to navigate this day in history. And how also, in terms of our caretaking strategies, a lot of what we are doing is holding and protecting the objects. We're not intervening in their lives in a way that maybe is typical to other conservation practices or preservation practices. Because these objects are born of a trauma, and they are so much about the stories that they share, we are in many ways venerating and kind of commemorating through the objects themselves, rather than looking at the anniversary as something completely intangible, because that's the work that I do. I've really learned a lot. As much as we think, obviously we know too, there's always something else to learn, and viewpoints evolve, and the objects definitely help those viewpoints to evolve. And at the same time, the meaning of them too, is mutable.
Lisa, your comment about not being fully informed about the deeper theoretical work that's been done around commemoration triggered my thinking about what is currently the second chapter of the book, which I've entitled Never Forget, Never Again, which is, Jessica, to what you were pointing in terms of there being some sort of extraneous desire to prevent further occurrences, which is rhetorically included in mission and vision statements and all of the places that I visited to research for this book, which span from Cambodia, Bosnia, Poland, France, South Africa, and the US. So maybe I'm making too much of an assumption about workers' attachment to these bigger propelling ethical or moral imperatives, such as never forget and never again. There are a few theories about where the phrase never again came from. And Raul Hilberg says of the liberation of the camp in Buchenwald, that people were holding up signs in different languages that said never again. And I should specify, Jewish survivors were holding signs that said never again. That's one theory about the origination of the phrase, but it is a phrase that is picked up poetically in Holocaust theology and literature. It is a phrase that is definitely echoed throughout all the places that I visited.
One thing I will say is never forget is very much at the foundation of, I think, modern thought in terms of history and its importance to humankind. So I view never forget in a far more broad way than just its associations with kind of traumatic events. I view our responsibility as a museum worker to not forgetting history, you know, no matter what that history is. So I have in my work, I feel a broader mandate than specifically just commemoration. So for me, that is, of course, intrinsic to the work that I'm doing now. But I wanted to contextualize my background and experience because I know that my voice has a very distinct place kind of within the work of the 9/11 Memorial Museum.
I could say something about Never Forget and the connection to mission. I've thought about that quite a bit because I'll admit also that the term Never Forget always kind of felt like branding a national catastrophe to me. And that didn't really resonate with me. And when I think about my work at the memorial, I don't think that I was working in a function necessarily of bringing visitors down to this site so that they were confronted with this trauma and acknowledged that this trauma happened, as much as I felt like I wanted to see people form human connections and start to process the human loss that was sustained on 9/11. I think we have talked about, you know, this idea quite a lot, and it's not a new concept by any means, but when people hear a large number, yes, of course, that's shocking when they hear a large death toll. But I think that it's when they are given kind of space and opportunity to read specifically about a specific person, to see artifacts tied to a specific individual, whether that's a pair of flip-flops that were worn by someone to evacuate from Lower Manhattan on 9/11, or whether it was a pair of drumsticks that a 9/11 victim who loved to play the drums used readily. To me, that was my primary function, to bring in this kind of diversity of artifacts and the stories harbored within these artifacts and help interpret them in a space where visitors could come and forge connections with the individuals. I think that that, to me, is more meaningful than implying that a population of people don't remember or aren't consciously thinking about 9/11 in the way that we think that they should. The origin of the term that you provided us with was really something that I was not aware of, and I was really moved by that. So I don't really feel like I could commentate on that axiom in relationship to the Holocaust as much as I feel like with 9/11, we as a society latched on to Never Forget very quickly. And it just, again, to me, felt like an easy way of almost like reprimanding people for not having the kind of relationship to this national tragedy that we as a society thought they should have. So, you know, in my role as a curator at the museum, I wasn't thinking about that so much as I was just really trying to think about ways in which I could create experiences for people to come and connect in various ways with the stories, with the people, with the artifacts, in whatever way they felt like that connection was possible.
I'd just like to add to that. So hearing you say never again, you know, I'm confronting that being said in that very particular way during this conversation. But I think that in some ways, I have more of a connection to never again, because the never forget's implicit in it. But also the idea is we are preserving things so that things do not like that happen again, that we can learn from history and the tragedies that have befallen people before us. We want to do it better. So yeah, never again, because I would hope that we can all learn something from this and aim to be better human beings as a result of the stories that have been preserved for us to learn from. Never again is very powerful in that way, whether you are looking at it through the lens of the Holocaust, through 9/11, or something else of a very traumatic nature. It means something very important. And I think that as caretakers of objects, our role is to preserve something really aesthetically beautiful or to preserve something that was an atrocity that we don't want to happen again. But regardless, it's for appreciation by our fellow human beings. For me, that is a mantra in my work because I am specifically involved with preservation. Comes in many forms, even at the 9/11 Memorial Museum. I think for me, the most powerful commemoration actually is, and some of it is preserved in the museum, are these unofficial responses of spontaneous memorials, because of the fact that they give space for people to commemorate in very distinct ways, where, you know, these more official forms of commemoration, such as public memorials like the 9/11 Memorial Museum or others, are not as individual, if you will.
Yeah, St. Paul's Trinity Church is located directly across the street from the World Trade Center site and really became, it was turned into a respite center in the immediate aftermath of the attacks. So it really became kind of like a locus for so many recovery workers, so many volunteers from all around the world, people who converged on Ground Zero in the days and weeks and months following the attacks, came to St. Paul's Trinity Church to kind of assist in whatever way they possibly could. And then certainly the site became an area where recovery workers could rest, could sleep, could get a massage. And some of, I think, the most moving artifacts in the museum are attached to the back of a pew that was saved from the church. And the pew itself has a lot of marks on it from just recovery workers kind of sitting down, their equipment, you know, was kind of grinding into the wood of the pew. So you could see some, you know, some of that wear from that particular time in history. But the way that the museum presents the pew in the historical exhibition is with all of these letters from children from all over the world adhered to the back portion of the pew. And a lot of the stories that we heard from recovery workers in particular were that they would come to the church to rest and they would have the letters from the kids that were being sent from all over the place there to read. And I just love thinking about that moment that a recovery worker would pick up a little drawing of a rescue dog down at Ground Zero. And, you know, you are our heroes. We love you. We're here to support you. I mean, I'm not even doing these messages justice. They are so charming. They are so pure. They are so heartfelt. And I just loved that decision that the museum made to share those on the back of the pew from the church.
What we might think of as a Catholic church turned into a denomination to all after 9/11 and opened its doors. And there were representations literally of people of all beliefs and cultures that went there to commemorate, pay tribute, and also a place where the recovery workers were able to connect with those stories and messages of hope.
I think that the work that they do is sacred. Mm-hmm. And I think that we don't pay enough attention to this role, but it's also a modeling role for how we tend to others and care for the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lisa, with your work, with the objects, as a storyteller myself, I understand objects as these vehicles for collecting and writing down a story. And so as far as religious text goes in the world, the Torah, the Quran, the Bible, all these books, those were collected and written by many, many people. So I see the correlation between the work that you're doing and this avenue, this path that's been followed for centuries. I also understand that people of faith probably did go to their churches and synagogues and talk about this experience that they felt and everyone else was feeling, but perhaps some didn't and they came to the museum instead. And that really, I think, the work that you do does uphold something in society that is very much needed, even if certain practices are not as robust as they maybe once were in history.
I actually think that with the dissolution of religion and the reliance on religious leaders as a way to bring suffering communities to healing in terms of thinking about memory, that other bodies, other careers, other professions have kind of moved in to play roles that were traditionally religious. So like the medicine man or the religious leader of a community gets asked or relied on less heavily, and things like therapists and museums pop up.
Does that resonate with either of you?
Whatever that might be, may not be the same path for each person. So thinking about the present is taking a very narrow view of what this history may mean one day and its interpretation, as we know from the way that history of centuries before us is being reconsidered, rethought, and debated. So really, for me, the work that I'm doing, while I know that it's serving a very important need to this present generation, I know it will serve probably an even greater need when the people with the lived experience of the event itself are no longer able to represent it themselves. So in that sense, what is very, I think, powerful for me about working at the museum is that we are dealing with a very recent history, right? Not many museums are dealing with specifically one topic, a history as recent as this one. Certainly there are others, so by no means am I trying to limit it in that way. But for me, I try to take the long view in a lot of things. I've been always fascinated by seeing, you know, and going to museums, what has survived throughout time, and not just what, but why, and the importance that people ascribe to it. So I think right now, the meaning of this history is still evolving. And while we've ascribed a preliminary significance meaning to 9/11, that will certainly change in time. And so the work of the museum is to make sure that there are records in order to reference, whether that is an artifact, an oral history, or something written, so that there's a place for interpretation and truth to be learned some other day.
Thinking about the theological perspective, the collection also contains a lot of rosary beads, prayer beads, you know, and other religious objects that were recovered from Ground Zero or from the attack sites and returned to the victims' families. And in particular, again, kind of thinking about that third and final chapter of the historical exhibition, proximate to where the cross at Ground Zero is exhibited in that space is a much, much humbler selection of objects that were recovered that belonged to 9/11 victim Patricia Fagan. And among the items recovered that were tied to her were a rosary. And I've always found those very small objects that people carried with them to be very powerful and very relatable. And I'm not a religious person, but I definitely believe in having a talisman. I really do. And carrying things with me on a daily basis that I feel in some way protect me. So I could really connect with that object, even though I'm not Catholic. And as I said, I'm not religious at all. But there's a real distinct beauty in it. And I think that there's quite a number, a lot of instances throughout the 9/11 Museum's collection where religious objects or objects that were symbolic, because I think even a non-religious example would be how Robert Gashar carried a $2 bill with him. And that was among the items recovered with his personal property and returned to his wife, who also carried a $2 bill with her, symbolizing both couples' second marriages and new start together. And I love that Murda Gashar made the decision to donate her $2 bill to the museum so that it could be exhibited along Robert's recovered $2 bill as well. So, I mean, I think that that goes back to a point that you made earlier, Lisa, about just the diversity and the different ways in which we find meaning and the ways in which we connect to these stories. So they could have maybe a direct and more clear religious connection, some of these objects like the rosary bead, for example. But then some of the other types of objects are representative of that kind of spirituality in a different sense, like the $2 bill.
That was really beautiful. I knew if we could get her to talk about objects.
The validity of the $2 bill as having religious meaning. It doesn't have to be attached to a faith claim.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's just about, I mean, I feel everybody carries something with them, whether it's tucked in their wallet or like in their backpack. So, you know, it just goes back to how many items there are in the collection that are like that and that are just so relatable and that could be viewed in the faith sense, as you said, Stephanie.
I feel a guttural feeling of loss when I think about people I know who will feel something on September 11th and who definitely are aware that the anniversary is coming because things are made so public related to it. But I will also say this is a feeling that I've had in other places, but I feel that same sensation thinking about people who will experience any pain, grieving, loss around 9/11.
I also feel it's almost too much to bear when I start really letting myself think about just the pain of another anniversary, the weeks approaching, just thinking about what people must feel leading up to that day. I don't know what could offer relief from that. I truly don't, other than maybe just being reminded that there is a community of people out there, and I feel like I want to be considered part of that community, who really do read these stories, really do imbibe these stories. And I will be thinking about so many individuals who I came to know through my experience at the 9/11 Museum on the anniversary, and in many, many days in the year to follow. I mean, always. That'll always be the case. So I hope that that offers something.
more information on the National September 11th Memorial and Museum, you can visit their website, 911memorial.org. For more on Bearing Witness and the work of Dr. Stephanie Arell, please visit stephaniearell.com. This podcast is brought to you in part by Shrine 13 at shrine13.org.